The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Another rainy day here in the Bluegrass. Glad to have you on board with us for the Leach Report. So put your feet up and kick back, and we'll talk a little UK sports with you for the next hour on today's show, and get your mind off that wet weather going on outside. Coming up today, Mike Pratt, of course, always joins us on Thursday, so we'll get his take on the Bahamas. When we last talked to him down there at the Atlantis last week, he had only seen one game, so more of Mike's take. Justin Rowland, Cats Illustrated. And we'll hear from Josh Teeter. I caught up to Josh last night. He's out in Portland, so didn't want to make him get up at 6:15 to come on the show, or 6:30. So taped him last night talking about securing his PGA Tour card last week for 2019. And also he played golf with Coach Brooks yesterday. So we'll have that interview coming up on the show today. Happy for Josh that he got that security for 2019. Let's get to the Wildcat news of the day. It is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group. That's a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Kentucky's going to have 8 home games in 2019 instead of 7 with a road trip to Ypsilanti, Michigan. Eastern Michigan is now going to play at Kroger Field instead of hosting Kentucky. And it was Eastern Michigan that initiated the discussion on this change. It is a much better deal for them, apparently, to get the guarantee that they'll get from Kentucky, which I think is north of $800,000. And that's better for them, for their athletic budget, than to get Kentucky there for a home game. Now, I'm sure their coach and their players are disappointed about this news, but the folks that worry about the bottom line made this happen. You know, you see this from time to time where there'll be a deal struck where it'll be a 2-1, is what they call it, where a team will play 2 games at the bigger school's field or arena, and then get them to come to their place once. But often they end up giving up that home game. So I don't know why they make the deal that way in the beginning, because it ends up just, I'm sure, is a sour taste for certainly, I'd say, coaches, players, and probably some of their fans. Nevertheless, good news for Kentucky. It's another home game. Good news for the budget and the fact that, you know, I don't think there were going to be a whole lot of Kentucky fans that were going to travel up to Michigan. So now this will be good for them. Last night, Duke played its first exhibition game in Canada, won big, as you would expect. R.J. Barrett had 34 points. Zion Williamson had 29. This is going to be such fun when Duke and Kentucky square off to start the season. I mentioned this maybe last week when Mike was on the show. One of the biggest games I could remember to start a season, and this goes way back, but NC State, I think, had an undefeated season in David Thompson's junior year in 73, but they were on probation, so they couldn't play in the tournament. So they were undefeated. UCLA won the title with Bill Walton, and they set up a game, I think it was out in St. Louis, where these two teams played against each other to start the season. And I believe my memory is correct on this, that UCLA won big, and then NC State ended up winning a rematch in the Final Four. But that's going to be such a tremendous buildup as that game gets close. And it's going to be on a Tuesday night in Indianapolis. So it's a fairly easy trip for a lot of Kentucky fans if you can get tickets. Cole Kubelik, SEC Network analyst. We've had him on the show before. He put out a tweet yesterday ranking his top 5 centers in the SEC, and number 5 on his list was Drake Jackson of Kentucky. So high praise there. He said that Drake has great feet and great body control, really understands leverage. Putting Drake in as the center really solidified Kentucky's O-line last season. Zion Harmon's ruled ineligible to play at Marshall County. His school hosts that Marshall County Hoop Fest in early December every year. And I think it's Dante Allen's team is going down there to play, I believe, and play Marshall County. So there was a lot of excitement about Allen versus Harmon, but apparently that's not going to happen. And congrats to Marcus Lee. Signed a deal with the Miami Heat yesterday. He played with Cleveland in the Summer League after playing his final season of college basketball at the University of California last season. And I was thrilled to see this news yesterday. Marcus is a great young man. And they didn't say what the terms of the deal were, but I would suspect it's one of the two-way deals that teams can use for the last couple of spots on their roster. But it's a shot in the NBA. And when you come up, you get NBA money. And as Mike Pratt has talked about before, and it's a chance to prove yourself. And so excited for Marcus. He'll be down there with Bam Adebayo. You couldn't have, I tell you what, their community service organization, their community service efforts there with Miami Heat have two great assets now. So you're not going to find nicer, better young men than Bam Adebayo and Marcus Lee. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Heading to a break. When we come back, we'll chat with Mike Pratt, but later, Josh Teeter and Justin Rowland. On the Leach Report, we're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Quarter past the top of the hour, Mike Pratt joins the program. His weekly appearance is brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. So have you gotten back into your routine yet, Mike? Recovered from the Bahamas?
Oh, yeah. I was ready to get out of there. I was telling Shannon, way too many people there. And you know, they weren't Kentucky fans, but, I mean, they're just people everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And just kind of wore you out. So it was fun. It was a good trip, but I'm glad to get back, not to this rain, but of course on Sunday we had a bunch of rain ourselves out there. So it's all good.
Are you watching the ESPN Plus thing and watching any of the Duke games? I know they started last night.
No, I didn't. I read about them. You know, we've been there. We've played that Canadian group or some part of that Canadian group. So I didn't know this was their year to take a trip. And I thought we might have a little bit of an advantage on them having, playing, but they're playing too. And obviously they look good, but, you know, they got a good team. So it's going to be a heck of a battle.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be fun to talk a lot about those matchups as we get closer. Let's talk a little bit about Kentucky. As I mentioned in the opening segment, when you were on with us last Thursday, we'd just seen them play the one game against the Bahamian team, and they didn't shoot it very well. Shot it more like I think we expect. I don't think they're going to be a north of 40% three-point shooting team, but they're not also 2-for-20. That first night was not who they are. So anything that you saw down there, whether about this team, that was any different than what you maybe were expecting?
Well, I was really pleased, and Calipari has to be pleased, Kenny Payne and the staff, Tony Barbee, Justice, with Nick Richards. I mean, Nick showed some things that he showed early last year, Tom, and then just faded away, lost his confidence. I was really pleased with him. So, Quade battled back. You know, Quade's a tough guy. And he's got that Philly toughness about him, and he had that poor shooting night, opening night, and came back and shot it and took good shots. Played a little point, but a lot of two also. So I think this team is going to be a very good shooting team, which will open up spacing for people to operate off the bounce into the paint and then with their back to the basket in the case of Nick. And the spacing last year wasn't very good consistently. It just wasn't, because guys – were afraid to shoot the ball, with the exception of Kevin. They wanted to drive it because they were struggling with consistency on their jump shot. And pretty soon, you and I sit there and we talk about it, and you got three guys in one small area in the corner, and you just can't operate that way. It just, everybody clogs it up. It gives the defense an advantage, you name it. I don't see that happening this year.
You know, I remember early on when Cal got here, they had those X's out on the floor that show players to stay outside. You know, it was all about creating space. That's such a big emphasis of what he does. So, you know, it was that was a team not really they adjusted, but that was not a team built to play the way he likes to have his teams play. This team is much more like the kind of makeup he would like.
I think so. And that team, of course, struggled shooting the ball. Bledsoe probably, would you not agree, was the best perimeter shooter.
Well, no, I saw about last year's team just having the spacing issues.
He teaches that offense the same way every time. I mean, there's only one way to teach it, and that's to figure out how you're going to space. But the spacing kept shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And sometimes, guys, their basketball IQ is not caught up with their talent. And when that happens, then it's slower to adapt, and sometimes it never does. I mean, this happens in the NBA also. Talented guys, you wonder, they're very athletic, you wonder why they don't play more or why they aren't in the league. Well, maybe they can't pick up on what needs to be done on a certain team they're on. And, it just happens. That's life. That's people. And last year's team was a struggle in that regard to pick it up. And I think the team the year before that got beat on the buzzer shot in the Elite Eight, I think those guys picked it up late. And they De'Aaron got to going 100 miles an hour. He was fast and quick, and he kind of got the spacing, and Monk kind of got the spacing out of shape. And then Derek was up and down. So finally they put it all together. And, man, they had some pretty good spacing down the stretch in that year.
Do you think this team in that basketball IQ area is maybe a little ahead of the curve? I know Calipari talked about defensively they worked briefly on some things and they picked them up quickly.
Yeah, they were behind. They're behind it in defensively. There's no question about it. He admitted it and told the story why. But I think because of the way they shared the ball at the time they shared, they were passing the ball not when they had to, but ahead of time. They saw things develop and delivered the ball as guys were getting open. You know, they made some nifty passes in the paint to guys where you wondered how they saw them. I mean, that is basketball IQ. And I think if you do that, if you know how to pass and when to pass, okay, again, it's willing and capable. Most people are capable. Are they willing to move that ball at the right time and make it work? And I saw a lot of that. So I think their basketball IQ is going to be really good.
Talking with Mike Pratt, we're going to take a quick break and come back with one more segment. And Josh Teeter will lead us off in the second half, and then Justin Rowland. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
24 after the top of the hour, we are chatting with Mike Pratt after we get back from the Bahamas, where Kentucky went 4-0 last week in its games. They got a really physical test from that Serbian team, and you had told us here on the show from watching practice that you could tell the guys were really focused, how well they were listening. You could see the eye contact with Calipari in the practices. And that day, I remember in the shoot around, he was talking to them about how physical it was going to be and what they'd have to do to combat that. And they went out and did the things that he had talked about in practice. And you have seen a lot of those shoot arounds, and that doesn't always happen. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. We'll sit there and then we'll go do the game, and you wonder, wow, what am I seeing? And
what did they miss?
Reed Travis, I thought was an interesting. Here's a guy that's played at Stanford in his career, graduate student. He could have the attitude that, hey, I played, I know, I don't have to pay attention. He's hanging on every word of Calipari. And I think that could be really big long term as far as leadership. But all of them pay attention. I've talked to guys who've coached and we're since then, and we've laughed about it. You always have some guy or guys that on a certain day they got a bad day, they're not paying attention, their mind's wandering, they're looking around. And for the most part, this team doesn't do that. I mean, they've been very impressive with that, Tom, and that's going to go a long way. I mean, they need to be taught. They're inexperienced for the most part. They need to be taught And you have to be receptive to being taught. I think this team showed so far that they are.
Kenny Payne does such a great job of working with the big guys on a daily basis in practice. You can see the benefit of that work in the way Nick Richards played down in the Bahamas. And I would suspect we'll see a little different version of Reed Travis now that he's had some game action, because he had some struggles down around the finishing some shots down low. What'd you see?
He really did. I was surprised at that. But there was a lot of banging. Can't call every foul. And the officials, our guys, they let a lot of stuff go. And I was glad to see that. They didn't want to, you know, march to the charity stripe to dominate the game. But he knows what it's like to play at a high level, D1 level, where he played in the Pac-12 and the people played against. I think he'll be fine. But maybe the key to him, though, is if he can get to that elbow and knock down that shot, let Nick Rome block the block, or vice versa. They create a high-low situation, one elbow area and one at the block, and they can, you know, knock down just a shot that they'll be given until they make it. And then when they make it, it pulls the defense out and opens it up for the inside guy. It's pretty simple. It's really simple, but, you know, simplicity has to be executed. So I'm going to watch him short corner jump shots, elbow jump shots. And we did see him occasionally, Tom, knock down a couple trays. So, I think this kid's going to grow his game. That's why he's there. And I wouldn't make too much of what happened out there, period. Okay?
One of the things that you gain from trips like this when you get to take them every 4 years is the guys, not only the extra practice time, but just the extra time that the guys get to spend together. And so you get a head start on building your team chemistry. It certainly looks very good for this group. We were right there by the bench. You could see how excited guys on the bench were, guys that they might be competing for minutes at the same spot with, were genuinely, you know, happy about how things were going for a teammate.
If you look back at the history of the teams Calipari's had, if your goal is to get an education or start your education and ultimately get to the NBA, you shouldn't worry about the minutes or the scoring average, because guys that have not played a lot of minutes or predominant amount, let's put it that way, or have not put up huge numbers, those guys have had a shot to play in the NBA. And if that's what it's all about, to make a living, this is an apprenticeship, and you just got to go along and listen, because he'll put you on the right path, he and his staff, if you'll listen.
Mike, a listener tweets in, Cal needs to understand Nick is not strong enough to play the low post with bruisers inside. They need to have him shooting from the free throw area. Agree or not agree?
I partially agree with he needs to shoot from the elbow in the short corner, but Nick's strong enough. If he sits down, a couple times he sat down very, very well and used that spin move on the baseline, he's strong enough. In the first game, he goes 5 for 5 because he turns and shoots the sky hook straight up, straight down. Misses his 6-1 when he fades. It's just a matter of Nick understanding how to perform. Oh, he's big enough. He's strong enough. He's quick. That's what's going to. He's not going to be a bully like Williams at Tennessee or Schofield or maybe Reed Travis. He's going to get you with the quickness, spreading out, using leverage, and using that big body. But I do agree that he can go to the elbow, and I think you'll see more of that. But he can play inside. Absolutely, he can play inside.
Mike Pratt, thanks, sir.
Hey, wish John the best. Glad he got his card back, okay?
Amen to that. Thank you, Mike. We're halfway home on the Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Welcome back into the Leach Report for a Thursday. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And we're going to go to an interview that I taped last night with Josh Teeter. We did it last night because Josh is out in Portland playing golf this weekend on the web.com tour. He secured his PGA Tour card for next season with a runner-up finish last weekend. So wanted to catch up to him, congratulate him, and also hear about his round of golf yesterday with Coach Brooks. So, Josh, you had such a strong performance last weekend, runner-up finish, that you have now punched your PGA Tour card for next year. I saw an interview of the web.com tour website with you, and it looked like it was pretty emotional for you, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm anybody that knows me knows that I'm pretty soft when it comes to stuff like that. I can get pretty emotional, and you know, it means a lot. You know, to have been out there and kind of know what's at stake out there, and now with the family going back out there, you know, it's kind of been trying to get there again for, you know, 3 years now. I thought I would get it done, but you never know, you know, if it's going to happen or not. And good round there, solid round on Sunday. Obviously, I would like to have won the tournament, but Trevor Cone obviously played great, and second place was good enough to get the card back.
And what exactly, for folks that don't know, what exactly does that mean for you next year?
Yeah, I think, so I'll be in a category where I won't be in every tournament. I'll probably be guaranteed to play in somewhere around 15 or 16 events. Depending upon how I finish this year, I get a priority ranking between kind of the 25 guys that get their card through the regular season on the web.com tour, plus the 25 guys that get it through the web finals. So there's 50 guys that'll be in the category I play out of. And then we'll shuffle around every fifth to sixth event throughout the schedule. They'll reshuffle the numbers based on the amount of money made or the amount of FedEx Cup points made. So you can always maybe jockey yourself up and, you know, play your way into more tournaments, or, you know, if your play isn't up to par, then you may play your way out of some. But over the years, you know, you kind of know the events and how far they go in the priority rankings, who gets in the field, and kind of got a good idea what you're going to have to start out.
You took a little bit of a risk when you played in the Barbasol here, right? Taking a week off from the web.com tour and put your earnings ranking at risk, right, to be able to play in your hometown?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, every dollar out here counts. And my goal at the beginning of the year was to have it solidified and locked up before the Barbasol, and I didn't do that. And but I wasn't going to go back on my word. And I think, you know, we have a stretch of 11 tournaments here that we're in, this being the ninth week. I was going to take a week off somewhere, and I think, you know, if I wouldn't have played in the Barbasol, I probably still would have taken that week off and just, you know, had a week at home. But, you know, when you play that many weeks in a row, you can get worn out mentally and physically. And I could say that's probably more where the risk was, that I took a week off, but I did play. So it was going to see how I, you know, performed when I came back.
What is it that anything you've done differently of late, or just in a good groove to make this happen for you?
Yeah, you know, I had that question a few times so far, and there's not much I've done differently. I'm still working on the same stuff with my swing. You know, my buddy Lee Cheney's caddying for me. We go way back to the days at Moorhead. His dad was my coach, and he was you know, teenager running around when we were playing, and then he played there as well. But he's been caddying for me and helping me with my swing, really, better part of the last 3 years. And then I did, you know, connect back up with the coach I'd had, you know, for 7 or 8 years when I was on tour prior, and got a little tip on my putting back in June, and I've just been way more consistent with that. And that's kind of where it falls for me. When I'm putting good and seeing putts go in, it just kind of frees me up for everything else. And that's kind of the way it's been.
Were you playing this weekend?
Am I?
Where are you? Are you playing a tournament this weekend?
I am, yes. I'm in Portland. We have the final regular season event, Winco Foods. So last one to kind of lock in the spot, and then we start the playoffs, web.com playoffs, next week.
And being out there in Portland for an event meant you got to hook up with your buddy Coach Brooks to play a little golf, right?
I did, yeah. We just got off the course today. Yeah, the last couple years in Portland, you know, it's a couple hours from Eugene. He made the trip down, he and Karen, to come watch a round or two, and we touched base a couple weeks ago, and I told him, depending on my tee times, maybe this time I'll come check your place out in Eugene, and play your course, and we had a good time out there today, and just had a bite to eat and about to head back.
Now, he always is tweeting about his golf rounds and whether he won some money or not. So did he take any money off of you?
Well, I might have beat him to the punch with that tweet today. I tried to take a page out of his book, even though I did mention people and, actual mentions on Twitter instead of just names. But we played Eugene Country Club, and we had a nice little match, and I was able to win a couple dollars. But like I said on there, I think he's just setting me up for a rematch in January in the desert.
How did you guys strike up this friendship? Because you can tell from Twitter, he's one of your biggest fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just look at golf in general, and it brings people together, number one. And, a couple mutual friends, and Brian Craig, the coach at Kentucky, he kind of reached out to me one year when I was playing in the desert, and Brett Setzer there in Lexington, same, kind of put us in touch, and he came out and watched around one year. It's what's now the Career Builder, and we connected. The next year, I went back. Their house had been built, and they hosted us, let us stay with them. I guess that's kind of how it started out.
Well, I know that was a nice treat to get you warmed up for the tournament this weekend, and we'll along with Coach Brooks, everybody here in Kentucky will be rooting for you. And congratulations!
Well, I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks for having me, and look forward to being back in Lexington at some point.
Yeah, see it at a basketball practice. Hopefully this winter.
Yeah, hopefully I'll get up there, around the holidays, and I'll find you there. Yeah.
That is Josh Teeter, and I know everybody that knows him here in Kentucky was just thrilled to see the news that he had gotten his tour card secured for next season. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
Justin Rowland joins us from Cats Illustrated, and lots to talk about. And we'll start with the football side, Justin, with the opener now just a little over 2 weeks away. You have a story up at the site about some of the position battles. Quarterback's the biggest one, so we'll start there. What are you hearing about the quarterback race?
I think when Chris Doering on the SEC broadcast during the Bahamas basketball game at halftime, or maybe during the lighting malfunction, he said he thought Gunnar Hoke was going to be the guy. I thought a lot of people were like, whoa, what does he know? And it kind of made me take a step back and wonder whether maybe this presumption that Wilson's athleticism, explosiveness was going to be the X factor, or is that just totally misguided? And I still think Wilson probably has the leg up because of that, and also because it doesn't seem like the receivers have really separated themselves in a way that, at least in the scrimmage, the coaches were thrilled with. But I think it's very likely both guys are going to get a chance in the regular season, and that's what it's going to come down to.
You think there'd be anything to the receivers improving once there's a guy that separates himself as the quarterback?
Yeah. I mean, especially individually. I mean, usually one or two guys develop a really unique rapport with whoever the quarterback is just because they like to throw a certain route or spot on the field, or they just have a certain timing chemistry. We'll just have to see who meshes with who.
What about other position battles that are most interesting to you?
Well, there aren't a whole lot just because they return so many starters, but the kicker position, it seemed like Stoops told reporters there that Miles Butler is the guy that he would go with if he had to make a decision today. But they got a lot of kicking work on the scrimmage, but he wasn't thrilled with the consistency of anybody. And then just like the backup running back position, I think Saheem King and A.J. Rose are going to end up splitting kind of second-team carries. Which freshman receiver is going to break into the rotation? I guess Alan Daly. I impressed Michael Smith, and I've heard good things about Alan Davey. And Akeem Hayes, even though he's only 5'10", 155, I thought he was for sure a redshirt guy, but it sounds like he's maybe a dark horse to play as a true freshman.
Interesting. The guys that got the three scholarships are all guys that could help. I mean, Butler could be the starting place kicker, and they seem really high on Bouvier, and he could kind of maybe be the Charles Walker take that baton to be the walk-on who becomes a reliable receiver. And then Zach Johnson's probably not going to get a lot of carries, but is a big special teams guy.
Yeah, Zach Johnson, like, he just crushes people on special teams. He loves those head-on collisions. And Bouvier, I mean, if you watch the spring game, like, he was the guy getting open, beating defensive backs, like, getting to spots behind the defense. And he's not just, like, this Wes Welker underneath kind of guy. Like, he can get deep and make plays on the ball in the vertical game. And I think the big thing is Darren Henshaw is not happy with the vertical throws. That's part of the offense has to improve the most. And he wasn't happy the quarterbacks weren't giving their receivers a chance to catch the ball on those deep throws, and that's got to get better.
Yeah, Steven Johnson was exceptional at that part of the game in his first year, and it wasn't as good last year. Was that mostly a factor of Bidette being gone?
Yeah, I mean, you can throw the ball up, and Bidette was pretty good at going to get it. But also, you know, when you're throwing the ball that far down the field with a man in your face, I think Steven's health might have had a bigger role in that than he would probably even still admit. You know, I think it's tough to fathom how much pain he was probably in when he was playing. That was probably a factor, too.
That makes sense. Where do you think Kentucky is going to be most improved? You know, it's a question we can revisit once we've seen him play. But, you know, at this point, from what you're hearing, how you're seeing positions play out, where do you think we'll see the most improvement?
I think the secondary's numbers are going to improve a whole lot. I mean, they are arguably the most experienced secondary across the starters in the country. And so many guys that have been there playing since they were freshmen and are now there as seniors. And I love the younger guys they've got. Terrell Ajean and Yusuf Corker, Devontae Robinson, Jordan Griffin, I think, is poised for breakout year. And even with Pascal out for an indefinite period of time, I think the pass rush is going to improve with first-round pick Josh Allen, potentially Boogie Watson's athleticism. They're going to help that secondary. They were like in the 90s in a lot of pass defense efficiency ratings. I think they're going to be one of the surprises in the SEC.
I'm talking with Justin Rowland from CatsIllustrated.com. It's at Roland Rivals on Twitter. The freshman class could be, I guess, we could include redshirt freshmen too, but anybody that you're hearing that is, you mentioned Akeem Hayes, anybody else you're hearing that is catching the coach's eye to where they could be in a rotation in a significant way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Darian Kennard, the offensive tackle, is gonna play a whole lot just because they got some good depth at tackle. But the linebackers, the freshman linebackers, DeAndre Square and Chris Oates, I mean, everybody's just fascinated with Chris Oates because he's built like true freshman linebackers at Kentucky have not been built, and his athleticism is off the charts. But DeAndre Square, I think, is going to make a major impact this year just because, going back to the spring, he's not afraid of contact. He puts his head in there, and he plays fast. And I stood next to him at media day, and his muscle definition has improved so much over the past year from when I saw him at camp. Like, he just looks like he's a much more physical player, and that was the big question he had to answer.
What about McCall at nose guard? Do you think he gets into the mix?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really on DeBose. I mean, if DeBose can hold up and if he can build off the success that he had last year, you know, you prefer the senior as the guy backing up Bohanna. But DeBose has been so inconsistent. That definitely opens the door for McCall. I think McCall has to improve his body a little bit, but kind of like a more heralded Bohanna last year, he's just so big and strong that he might be tough to keep off the field midseason. We might be talking about him as a surprise contributor.
We'll shift to a little basketball. Who impressed you most in the games you saw from the Bahamas?
So many guys impressed me, but the one that I didn't feel like was really getting his due totally was Emmanuel Quickley. I mean, I was just, he's a little bit of Tyler Ulis in terms of he doesn't look like a freshman. He seemed to always make the right decision. He wasn't turning the ball over. He's so long, he can keep defenders at bay. He can jump over the press, over the pressure, and find shooters all over the court. I just really liked Quickley. I think he's clearly the lead guard at this point.
You caught up with John Rothstein of CBS for an interview you've written up for the site. What most interesting came out of that?
Well, he riled everybody up when he ranked Kentucky third in the SEC and sixth nationally. And he didn't back down from that. He did say that what he saw in the Bahamas makes him think it's going to be one of the more competitive SEC races in the best version of the league that he's seen. But I asked him, is there anything besides the unknown that caused you to maybe defer to some of the other top teams in the country that led to that ranking? And his answer was that they're definitely a national title contender, but he hasn't seen a Calipari team where you just don't know who that lead guard is going to be. It's kind of a combination of Quade and Hagans and Quickly right now. He said when they're on the road 60-60 against Mississippi State, who is going to be the lead guard that takes over? And he says he just doesn't know the answer to that. And I think because of the strength of the SEC, he doesn't know how they're going to fare in some of those road conference games. But he does think they're a strong title contender.
Yeah, after, you know, it's a good lesson, and you see the tweets, and then you actually see it more in depth and in more context. And you can disagree, but he made some fair points. The fact that how well teams, more experienced teams, have done in recent NCAA tournaments is at least a fair point.
Yeah, I told him the one reason I would have disagreed with him is I think I could definitely see Tennessee and Auburn finishing, you know, say 14-4, where Kentucky's, you know, 13-5 in league play because of the experience and the known commodity factor. But I think at some point you have to bake in Kentucky is clearly a more likely national championship team than those other two. Even if they have a higher floor than Kentucky, Kentucky certainly seems to have a higher ceiling, and I would have erred on that side a little bit more.
As we get into the season and games are played, good coaches that'll have a lot of tape, we'll find some flaws to try to attack. Doesn't seem like there's anything too obvious, though, with this group. Did you see anything that you noticed in the games down there?
No, especially with the way that Richards was protecting the rim. I thought he was a much more instinctual shot blocker, and that's probably his path to getting on the court more if he can continue that. I don't have any glaring holes that I see. My question is more, A, how strong was the competition really? We've heard a lot of these teams have pedigrees, but I thought they were a little bit slow defensively, the teams Kentucky was playing. They couldn't keep Kentucky in front of them. I think that'll change. And the other thing is, how much will the college game and how it's played, how choppy it is, how many whistles there are, how much will that change the kind of product that we see? So really, how valuable was the sample size is my question.
Justin Rowland joins us on Thursdays here on the Leach Report from CatsIllustrated.com. Thank you much.
Thanks a lot.
Justin's weekly visits brought to you by Shufflebean Coffee. We'll be right back to wrap it up on the Leach Report. Happy birthday to Madonna. Material Girl is 60 today. This was her first hit record. I was still spinning the hits as a part-time DJ when this came out. And remember when this one came through the station. Donato's slice of Wildcat history. James Young shares a birthday with Madonna, among others. Former left-handed sharpshooter on the 2014 national runner-up. Again, thanks to Josh Teeter for joining us. See a quote or a tweet from Coach Brooks. Not only did Josh take my money, so did Lee, his caddy. Coach Brooks said,